You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us all of your text, all of your voicemails. We have a full hour of mailbag from Thanksgiving yesterday. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, spending a lot of time with your family, trying to catch up, a full hour of mailbag going on yesterday's episode. So listen to that on top of today's interview with Sean Hykin, former OG Locked On Bulls host, does a lot of great work around national NBA, and that's kind of where our focus was with Sean today. So a lot of interesting stuff, all the way from Markelle Fultz to the Jimmy Butler trade to what's going on in Golden State, as well as a lot of good Bulls stuff, what he's seen so far. So you can follow Hykin on Twitter, at Hykin, for all of his work over at BleacherReport.com and Dime Up Rocks. So with that, without further ado, let's get right to Sean Hykin.
Right now, Jordan and I are very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of the OG hosts, one of the guys who started this very same podcast, and a former Bulls beat writer for The Athletic Chicago. You can currently catch him as an NBA writer and contributor to places like Bleacher Report and Dime Mag. He is Sean Hykin. Sean, what's up, buddy? Happy belated Thanksgiving. Glad to have you back on the show.
It's always good to be with you.
We're doing all right, man. We're trying to grin and bear it, as they say here in Chicago. A trending tanking hashtag that I'm trying to get motivated, because this Bulls team has been hit by this rash of injuries early in the season, and what many hoped to be a year or two of a rebuild, taking big steps forward, has not been thus far with all these people on the shelf. So I mean, first question for you, I know that you still are you know, keeping your eye on this Bulls team that you used to cover on a daily basis. What to you has been the biggest surprise, whether it be a negative or a positive? Is it the play of Jabari Parker? Is it Zach LaVine looking like a guy who was actually worth that contract? What sticks out to you so far for these Bulls through about 20 games?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just how ready Wendell Carter looks when it comes to, you know, a 19-year-old rookie. It's actually kind of funny, you know, for however many years the Bulls have really loved to draft these four-year college guys, whether it's, you know, Chandler Hutchison, who was their other first-round pick this year, or, you know, guys like Doug McDermott, Denzel Valentine, or, you know, even Chris Dunn and Jerian Grant, who we can kind of call honorary Bulls draft picks because they were guys that we know they wanted during the draft, were very, you know, motivated to trade for when they did. But they're most guys, and the reason that they like to draft, you know, these four-year college guys or kind of these older prospects is because supposedly they're, you know, quote unquote, ready to play right away or ready to contribute or they're more mature. The most NBA ready draft prospect the Bulls have taken in 10 years is a 19-year-old. And you just see, you know, how ready Wendell Carter looks on the defensive end, just how poised he is already, you know, how good his instincts are there. You know, his offensive game is really polished too. I mean, I think if you have to point to one thing, and obviously, like you said, they had all these injuries and, you know, the team isn't really playing any defense. But, you know, you look at Wendell Carter and you think, okay, that they nailed that pick. This is going to be a piece going forward.
Sean, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the other positive of the Bulls' start to the season so far, Zach LaVine. You know, from a local perspective here, everybody's gushing over Zach LaVine. And, you know, all the people that stood by his side when the Bulls made that trade are now, you know, making it known that the guy that they traded for, they knew that this was going to happen. I guess I'm curious what your thoughts are on him, seeing him from afar and comparing him to other guys in the NBA. What were your initial thoughts of what Zach LaVine was going to be this season? Are you surprised at the numbers he's putting up this early?
Well, you know, you kind of have to throw out last year just because he was coming off the torn ACL. You never really knew what he was going to look like. And, you know, especially for a guy that relies that much on his athleticism. But, you know, you've seen this year, he's basically picked up right where he left off before the injury. He's not only been, you know, scoring a ton, he's been doing it efficiently. And, I mean, I think if the Bulls had more, you know, offensive help for him, you know, he'd probably be even better. Because, you know, the problem with them right now is that they basically, if he's not going off, then they really have nobody who can score. And, you know, getting Lauri Markkanen back in a couple of weeks or whenever that happens, I think is going to help that. But, you know, you see what Zach LaVine is. I mean, I think pretty clearly he's shown that, you know, he can be a go-to scorer in this league for a team like, you know, a team like the Bulls. And they, you know, I think, you know, as time goes on, he's still so young and, you know, looking like matching that contract. And I'll admit that when they matched the offer sheet that he got from Sacramento, I was kind of saying, I don't know if he's worth that money. I don't know if that's really a smart thing to do during this rebuild. It's looking pretty good right now.
It is. I mean, like, I guess those are basically the two positives that Bulls fans can take away so far. It's Wendell and it's LaVine. As you said, certainly a hit and maybe a little bit of luck that Wendell fell to the Bulls at 7. And certainly LaVine looking like a guy who was absolutely worth that contract. That about covers the positives for these Bulls so far. I mean, like, honestly, and on one of the big things that this team has been lacking recently, and it's, you know, people like Wendell have said as much, is kind of a lack of leadership right now as far as a player on the court. And I think most people are looking to Chris Dunn and his return because they certainly miss his vocal leadership on the floor and especially on the defensive end. Sean, I'm curious what you make of Fred's just carousel of random options at point guard. This is something that, you know, has been a consistent for Fred, even dating back to when you were covering this team, even like when our options were Michael Carter Williams, Jaron Grant, who you mentioned a second ago. And now it's like, okay, well, Dunn's on the shelf. So we've got Archie Diakono, who, you know, Bulls fans love as the gritty guy who's like the second Kirk Heinrich. Cam Payne, who's still just the butt end of a joke here after that trade with OKC. Shaq Harrison, who looks like a defense first guard who's not terrible, that they picked up off the scrap heap. Got a couple of guys on two-way contracts. Like, when Fred is finally getting Dunn back as hopefully the starting point guard that deserves to be such, what do you see, Fred? If you're Fred, who actually gets minutes with random group of point guards he has now?
I mean, I think Shaq Harrison, as much as, like, you know, this is a whole list of options that don't really look like great options at this point. Like, it really is kind of wild how much the Chris Dunn injury has set them back, because, I mean, this is the exact same thing that happened the last year that I was covering them on a full-time basis. You saw this happen in the playoffs. Rajon Rondo gets hurt, and then they basically just immediately don't have anybody playable. Like, they're throwing Isaiah Cannon out there in the starting lineup in the playoffs. You're kind of seeing the same thing happen now with Chris Dunn being out. And, you know, when he's out, then you're suddenly looking at, you know, Ryan Archidiakono and Shaq Harrison and Cameron Benn. It's like, okay, these guys are like maybe guys who you can maybe hope will play spot minutes, you know, in this league, but that's about all they are. They're getting thrust into these bigger roles, and that's just not something that any of those guys are really equipped to do. And you're kind of seeing what the consequences of that are with, you know, how that this offense basically is just doesn't have anything. It, you know, if, like I said earlier, if Zach LaVine is not hitting his shots and going off for 25 points a game, they basically have nobody else who's going to score. And, you know, Chris Dunn, I mean, obviously Chris Dunn isn't really much of a shooter, but, you know, he's a better ball handler and playmaker than any of those guys that we just named that have been getting these point guard minutes. And so getting him back, I think, is going to help. But they definitely, I don't know really what they're going to be doing, you know, the rest of the season when it comes to moves they could make, you know, on the trade deadline or in the buyout market or whatever. But they need to get another playable point guard in case the Chris Dunn injury lingers longer than we think it might.
Speaking of the point guard situation, I'm curious, and we've talked about it a lot here over the last, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks about who's going to fill in, maybe the hot hand. And, you know, that's usually the center point of where you talk about your leadership and where it's supposed to come from. And, you know, I think, you know, not only the fans are noticing this, but I think the players to some degree are kind of noticing the absence of not only Chris Dunn, but Bobby Portis too, who, you know, in the short stretch that he did play this season, you know, he was touted for being the guy that was the most vocal on the floor. So I'm curious, the thoughts after the Bulls loss a couple days ago, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. had spoken out about leadership in the locker room and how we're missing that voice and somebody needs to step up and it starts with one person and we're struggling to find that. I'm curious, just from your experience and looking around the NBA, if this is a situation where you're like, eh, he's a rookie. He's not really going to get nobody's going to really listen to him. Or if guys on this team with the second youngest team in the NBA should really kind of start to buy into that and say, you know what, if this guy wants to step up and he's already telling us what's going on, what's the problem, we need to find a solution, maybe we should start listening to him. So how do you think that characterizes Wendell Carter Jr. and if he gets casted off by veterans or if guys would normally start buying into that?
You know, I think he's going to get embraced actually as a leader because, you know, I think early on it's so obvious like how mature he is for his age, and I don't think it's really just, oh, he's a rookie, he's not going to be. I mean, you saw, you know, how Donovan Mitchell last year with Utah kind of became that vocal leader, and he kind of became the guy that everybody rallied around. I don't think it's out of the question that somebody like Wendell Carter, especially, you know, with the void of other, you know, veteran leaders that they have. I mean, I guess you could point to a guy like Robin Lopez as, you know, he's the veteran on this team. He's the guy with the experience, but he's barely playing this. He's like in and out of the rotation. So it's a lot harder for people to, you know, listen to a guy or, you know, rally around a guy unless it's somebody like, a, you know, Kendrick Perkins or a Udonis Haslem or somebody like that, who at this point isn't playing very many minutes. It's kind of hard for, you know, Robin Lopez, who isn't, you know, doesn't have the kind of role that maybe he did the last couple of years with the Bulls, to be that leader that, you know, everybody listens to because he's not, you know, playing on a regular basis. Wendell Carter, you know, he's been starting from day one as a rookie. So, I mean, he earned that respect from a guy like Robin Lopez, where, you know, he took his kind of starting spot. He earned that respect from day one that, you know, it wasn't just, oh, he was the lottery pick. He's, you know, he's going to be the starter. He earned that starting spot in training camp and in the preseason. So he's going to, you know, I think guys kind of respect him just from that standpoint. But yeah, once they get back a guy like Bobby Portis, who at this point, I mean, this is such a young team. He's only their fourth. He's only in his fourth year in the league, but he's one of their longest tenured guys at this point. But I think he is their longest tenured guy in terms of who's been in Chicago the longest. So yeah, a guy like that, who, you know, he kind of tends towards, you know, being a vocal guy anyway. Once they get him back, you know, in what, a month or a few weeks, whenever that is going to be, you know, I think that's going to help. But yeah, this is definitely a situation where, you know, until they can get, you know, another veteran who's going to really be that guy that's going to, you know, be somebody that everybody listens to. Yeah, I mean, why not Wendell Carter? I mean, they drafted him to kind of be a franchise centerpiece anyway. Why not, you know, get a head start on it? And from the leadership standpoint.
We're talking with Sean Locked On Bulls. He's one of the OG hosts of this very podcast and a contributor currently for Bleacher Report and Dime Mag. Follow him on Twitter at Hyken. Sean, one person who clearly does not seem to be interested in playing a role of vocal leader on this team is a guy who just mentioned a second ago, and that's Jabari Parker, the free agent signing splash that the Bulls made. Very much similar to the signing of Dwayne Wade, who's Miami Heat are actually in town to play the Bulls tonight. What's your take on Jabari and how he fits or doesn't fit so far? He's coming off of arguably his best game as a Bull flirted with a triple-double in their win against a very bad Suns team on Wednesday. There's a lot of contention around Jabari's name among Bulls fans right now. It's no secret I was against the signing from the start and have become known as a pretty aggressive Jabari hater on this podcast. Jordan tries to play the middle of the field a little bit more and you know, gives his credit where it's due. What do you think about the whole Jabari experiment so far?
Well, I thought it was a bad fit early on because at this point in his career, like he, you know, early on, like he was looking like he was going to be pretty good, but then, you know, he had the two ACL tears and then you know, he kind of lost a lot of that athleticism. So he's basically not able to guard small forwards anymore. And so you have to play him at the four basically in order to be effective. And, you know, if you look at what else was on the Bulls roster, you know, they had just drafted two front court guys with the seventh overall pick the last 2 years, and they still had Bobby Portis, and, you know, they still had Robin Lopez that theoretically was going to get, like their front court was pretty crowded, and then they drafted a guy, or they signed a guy like Jabari Parker, who his best position is the four, but they were going to play him at the three, and Fred Hoiberg, you know, immediately was just like, no, we're not going to do that because he can't play there, and it just, it's just been such an awkward fit because he's a guy that, you know, he doesn't really play defense. B, you know, he's a guy, you know, if the Bulls hadn't given him this contract that they gave him, and they basically gave it to him because he's from Chicago and they wanted somebody who's local and who was a big name and who was going to sell tickets. If he hadn't gotten that contract from the Bulls because of those circumstances, I don't know what other kind of deal he would have gotten from somebody else in the league. And I think he knows that. And I think he's kind of at this point where he's kind of trying to prove to other teams, because I think everybody involved knows that they're probably not going to pick up his team option for next season at $20 million. And so I think he's kind of motivated to prove to other teams, okay, look, you know, I can still be in the league. I don't want, you know, I don't want to be going and playing in China or whatever next year. And so he kind of has his own thing that he's doing. And then, you know, you've kind of also just seen how, he gets brought off the bench and he immediately starts like not talking to reporters or just kind of not taking that, you know, maybe the way he should. And it's just such an awkward fit. And I think it kind of hinders the development of some of these other young guys that they maybe do see as long-term pieces. But it's such an in-character move for, you know, you compared it just a few minutes ago to Dwayne Wade. And I think that's pretty apt where, you know, Dwayne Wade was a guy that was brought in. Like, I don't think he made that much basketball sense, you know, from day one. But hey, it's a name. He'll sell tickets. He's local. He's a guy who's from. And to Jabari's credit, I mean, he does a ton of stuff in the community in Chicago, as you guys obviously know. And he's from there. He has a lot of ties there. He does a ton of great, you know, charity work and off court stuff. That's all great. As a basketball signing, I didn't think it made sense the day they did it in July. I still don't think it makes that much sense. I would be shocked if he was a part of their long-term plans going forward. I'm just not really sure at this point what it's accomplishing to have him there. But it's kind of going about the way I thought it was going to go.
Yeah, I'd agree with you too. And, you know, all the off-court stuff is great. And Dwayne Wade did similar things when he was here in his time. But, you know, the similarities are kind of overbearing it at a point. You know, Dwayne Wade came in and said he was going to do all of these things for this Bulls team in 1 year of being here and use that to make this team successful. And the same thing with Jabari Parker. He said he was going to come in here and try to help things and kind of be that veteran vocal guy. And he hasn't done that. And he said he could play the three and they haven't even experimented that because it's been so bad. And, you know, he didn't take the benching very well either. And Fred Hoiberg's at a point where he's got to play his best guys. And he knows Jabari can't fit necessarily. But hopefully he can build off of what he did on Wednesday. But I want to go shift our focus now to the main part of the NBA. And before we get to all of the Jimmy Butler stuff, because I definitely want to get your take on that, I got to ask you about Markelle Fultz, going to the 76ers really quick. There's been some rumblings from Bulls fans asking us. We've dropped us text messages and voicemails asking about Markelle Fultz. What's going on with him with the 76ers? Can they find a trade partner for him? Is that going to be a situation where they're going to try to work it out themselves in Philly, or are they really going to try and put him on the market? And will anybody pay him, not only just because of the broken shot, but also you got to consider his contract too, right? So is there anybody out there that was willing to take a chance on trying to fix Markelle Fultz? And would the Bulls be an interesting and entertaining place to maybe do that?
Well, I mean, I don't know if that would be the best thing for Markelle Fultz when you look at some of the, you know, the track record that they've had with guys' injuries and, you know, the Bulls medical staff and all that kind of stuff. I almost feel like that would maybe not be the best thing for Markelle Fultz going from the situation he's in now to another situation with, you know, with questionable kind of history on that end.
Right.
But so I guess I would probably kind of dismiss that from the Bulls end. But, you know, I think there's just, you know, there's always a certain halo of, you know, whenever somebody was the number one overall pick in the draft, like there's always going to be people who are saying, hey, you know, he was the number one pick. You know, we think if we put him in the right situation, you know, we put him in our organization and our culture and all that, you know, it's going to fit. There is just clearly something so physically wrong with the guy. And I mean, there was the report in The Athletic a couple days ago that, you know, it's not just the shoulder, that he also has a wrist injury. That and like some of the details, I don't know if you guys read that story. It was Jared Weiss and Derek Bodner and Sam Amick at The Athletic that kind of all worked together on that story. There were some crazy details in that story that, like, he cannot feel his hand when he grips the ball. And so he had to relearn how to grip the ball when he's shooting. And he was, like, feeling physical discomfort, bringing the ball up above his chest to shoot. Like, it was some pretty wild stuff that there was, like, there were actually, you know, concrete details about in terms of just how physically he's just not right at all. And it's just the kind of thing, like, is he still salvageable? I don't want to completely write the kid off at age 20 or 21 or whatever he is right now. And he was, it's not even like an Anthony Bennett situation where he was taken number one overall and everybody at the time was just like, okay, wait, what are you doing? Markelle Fultz was the consensus number one pick. Like, everybody knew that that was going to be the pick. And, you know, he was terrific at Washington and, you know, he, you know, people had a lot of high hopes for him. And then physically, he just has not been right since then. I have no idea what, you know, what happened or, you know, where something went wrong with the injury. But, you know, maybe, you know, I kind of think he at this point might just need to, like he did last year, just kind of take some time off and just really just focus on getting right physically. It seems like that's what he's doing right now. But, like, if I were a team, I don't think his trade value is very high right now, so I certainly wouldn't give up anything for him. But if it was just a matter of, you know, yeah, you know, we can just, you know, if we had just had the space to take on his contract, yeah, I think I would take a flyer on him.
While we're talking about the Sixers, Sean, let's touch now on the whole Jimmy Butler thing. Even, you know, whether or not Markelle Fultz stays or goes or gets his stuff together, the Sixers look like one of the better teams in the East. They're currently the 3 seed, trailing only the Raptors and the lightning hot start Milwaukee Bucks. Do you think that the acquiring Butler move really moved the needle and made the Sixers like the odds on favorite to win the East? And as far as the way that trade went down, were you picking sides between our old pal Tibbs and Jimmy, the now super, you know, inflated ego player? Were you happy to see Jimmy get the trade that he was demanding? And do you think he really makes them the favorites in the East now?
Now, the favorites in the East might be a little bit strong because there's the East is pretty top heavy this year. And I think you could even argue that, you know, outside of Golden State, who I do still think is head and shoulders above everybody else, despite everything they have going on right now, you could argue that besides those guys, the 2 through 5 best teams in the league are the top 4 teams in the East. So they're going to have pretty stiff competition anyway. But certainly, if you're the Sixers, you know, you see how hot Toronto is starting with Kawhi Leonard. You see how hot Milwaukee is starting with, you know, the leap that they've made this year under Coach Bud. You kind of have to make a move like this in order to, you know, keep up, because they had kind of started a step behind. You know, they had that 1-5 start on the road. And, you know, they were looking at being like, okay, you know, we were supposed to be a contender, but we're kind of a step behind these other teams. And then you kind of just saw, I mean, it's obviously like the chemistry fit isn't perfect yet in Philly with Jimmy. Like, it's going to take some time to feel that out, especially for somebody as ball dominant as him. But you saw that game against Charlotte, like right after he gets there, you know, he has that block at the end of the game and then he hits the game winner. Like, and it's the kind of thing, like Philly didn't really have a closer or a guy that you can just, like, give the ball to and say, hey, get us a bucket, like, at the end of games. Because, you know, who are their 2 best players right now? Ben Simmons, who, you know, is not a willing shooter at all. And then Joel Embiid, who's more of a defensive guy at this point. Like, they needed that guy that, you know, you can say, okay, go get us a bucket. And that's what Jimmy Butler is. And so I think absolutely that's a trade you make every single time. And I think he's going to make them better. It's just going to take some time from a chemistry standpoint. Now, as far as the Minnesota thing goes, like I was, they came here about a week or so, I want to say, before the trade actually went down. And it just seemed like everybody there was so over it. And I don't think it really made the whole thing really made anybody look good. I, you know, the way Jimmy was handling it obviously wasn't a great look, where he was basically still around the team, but he was deciding when he was or wasn't going to play. And, you know, that kind of didn't make him look great. But then I think Thibodeau handled everything terribly too. What he should have done was honestly what the Cavs are doing right now with J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith wants to trade, you know, they know he's not a part of their long-term plans. And so they're kind of saying, okay, look, just don't be around the team. Like go work out with your own people. We'll try to work on a trade. We'll see if we can find someone to, you know, give us a package that we like. But in the meantime, you know, you can go away and not be a distraction. Thibodeau was so, you know, wedded to the idea that he was going to be able to make things work out with Jimmy, and he was going to be able to change Jimmy's mind to make him want to stay. And that's because they have that relationship going back several years back to, you know, when he was his coach in Chicago. And it just, like, Thibodeau just was, like, blind to the idea that, no, there's no way that this is going to happen. Like Jimmy doesn't want to be here. We should just trade him. And as a result, it just kind of made it more difficult than it needed to be for everybody, you know, both not just Jimmy, but also for Tibbs and for some of those young guys on the Timberwolves who were just kind of in uncertainty every night because they didn't know whether Jimmy was going to play. So it was just a bad situation for everybody. And I think it's good for everybody that it's gotten out of the way now.
Just quickly following up on that, you know, you mentioned Jimmy Butler kind of sitting out, holding out, deciding when he's going to play, when he's not. And then now J.R. Smith doing similar things, saying, I don't want to be in a team that's tanking. Is this going to be a common theme that we're going to start to see with players now? You know, this is two incidences now, less than 20 games into the NBA season. Is this going to be a situation where if guys start to get frustrated with their situation, they're just going to be like, you know what, I'm done. Find a trade partner for me. I'm going to walk away. And that's going to be it, because this is two incidences now that's happened this season. So can you see this becoming a common theme with other guys who are frustrated with their situation?
I mean, it could. I think these two situations are both such exceptional cases. I mean, the Jimmy thing, like the dynamic with him and Tibbs was just kind of crazy. And then with JR, like there was just a whole bunch of weird stuff going on there with, you know, LeBron just left and now they have this kind of veteran team, but they also want to play their young guys. You can kind of see how JR would get frustrated. I can tell you, I think that the league kind of knows that the optics of this becoming a widespread thing would not be very good. So I think they're going to do whatever they can to incentivize guys to not do that. But I don't think it's really going to become like the thing where like, oh, just very commonly, you know, everybody who, you know, wants to get traded is going to just say, oh, you know, I'm not going to play. But, you know, it's certainly something to keep an eye on. That is actually pretty interesting.
Quickly to the Western Conference now, give me your thoughts on Golden State. You know, the stuff going on with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green and then Steph Curry being out with injury and seeing how drastically different that team is playing over the last 2 weeks or so. What's going on there? What are your thoughts? Is this the end of Golden State's era? Do other teams look around the league? And, you know, I even go back to yesterday. Like there was a tweet yesterday that showed Kevin Durant liked a tweet about the Golden State Warriors. It was a comment on an Instagram post You think it was fake?
I think so. I sent that to somebody and they told me it was fake. So I would maybe not take that, you know, as the gospel. Just that him liking the Instagram comment. I mean, it's certainly possible. Like that stuff has kind of happened before. Remember he liked some Instagram comment about Russ being the problem in Oklahoma City, and then he's like, "Oh no, it was an accident. They didn't mean to like that comment." Like, I mean, it's certainly possible, but I was told yesterday that was fake.
Interesting. Well, give me your thoughts in general on like what's going on with Golden State, how drastically different they're playing without Steph Curry. And I think people are starting to realize that. If you didn't realize it before, is KD pretty much, is this going to be like, all right, we're going to try to grind this out, win one more championship, and then KD goes on his way? Or the Golden State Warriors still saying like, you know what, let's back this up for a second. You know, we don't want to just automatically lose Kevin Durant at the end of the season. So the disgruntled, we've never seen this before from this Warriors team. So what are your thoughts on the whole thing going on in Golden State?
Well, I still think they're winning the title going away this year. Like, I think, you know, as long as Steph is healthy by the time they get to the playoffs, you know, they're going to be head and shoulders above everybody else. I still believe that. Now, with that said, yeah, the Kevin Durant thing, and I've been saying for a while, I thought it was possible that he was going to leave. And I think he kind of, I mean, we kind of know this about him at this point, that Kevin Durant is a guy who cares a whole lot what people think about him and what people think his legacy might be. And, you know, he came to the Warriors in the first place because he wanted to win titles, and okay, they've won titles now, but everybody kind of is looking at him like, hey, you joined a 73 win team and this is how you've won titles. And even like the Warriors fans, like they're never going to love him as much as they love Steph and Clay and Draymond and the guys who were there from day one. And so I think he might look around at this point, you know, in the off season and be like, you know what, I got my ring. Now I can say I have three rings. Now I'm going to go kind of, you know, do my own thing and, you know, be the guy on my own team. Now, whether that's the Knicks or the Clippers or whoever, I don't know, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if he decided to leave, because it seems like it's pretty uncomfortable there for everybody, as much as it works so well on the court, because there's still so much more talent than everybody else. These guys are all professionals and they're going to play together, even if they kind of have these personal disagreements. You know, I still think because of that, they're going to win the title. But, like, it's certainly not a comfortable dynamic, and I don't see any way that it's really going to resolve itself long term. Like, he and Draymond might be okay right now, like, from a personal standpoint. But it's still, you know, a question of, you know, Durant, you know, gets free agency, and it's, you know, he's looking at it like, do I really want to sign up for more of what has been a pretty uncomfortable dynamic thus far, at least this season?
Sean, I mean, like, I think I'm with you in that the Warriors, assuming Steph comes back from this injury and is the Steph Curry we all know, and assuming that the KD Durant, the KD Draymond stuff doesn't actually blow up in their face, they're the you know, favorite across the board, across the entire league. Like, what you think of some of the other curious ways that this Western Conference standings has stacked up so far through the first 20 or so games of the season? I mean, Houston looks like a team that took a giant step back. Utah, one of the other teams that looked like, you know, a up-and-coming contender in the Western Conference playoffs last season, has had a slow start out of the gate. They're, you know, a game under 500. And then you've got teams like the Nuggets, who have cooled off a little bit after their crazy hot start, but they're still sitting there at the sixth seed, even without Russell Westbrook for a handful of games. The Thunder at the four seed, 11-6. The Clippers without Blake Griffin, 11-6. Your Portland Trail Blazers, even after all the rumors about somebody needs to go, should they trade Dame, should they trade McCollum, are the two seed at 12-6. And the Memphis freaking Grizzlies are atop the West right now at 12-5. So just wondering who you see through this first, you know, small sample size of the season in the Western Conference playoff picture as real contenders that are still, you know, not where the Warriors are, but who are real and who are fake in this top eight in the West right now.
You forgot to mention the Sacramento Kings, who are actually
it's unbelievable.
Like a real basketball team for the first time in however many years. It's actually like, I think it's still too, it's still too early to really think, you know, okay, this is how it's going to be for the whole season. You've kind of seen this over the years. There have been teams that started out hot and then cooled off. I think Memphis is interesting, and I think we're starting to see just how valuable Mike Conley is. Remember, he only played 12 games last year, and that contributed in a big part to why the Grizzlies, you know, had one of their worst seasons in a long time, and, you know, were in the lottery. And then Jaren Jackson, their rookie, is that, you know, you want to talk about a guy like Wendell Carter. We talked about him earlier and how mature and poised he looks at both ends of the floor. Jaren Jackson also has looked awesome so far. They're number four overall pick. So I kind of like Memphis. I don't know if, I mean, they're going to stay the best record in the West. No, I don't think so. But I think that, you know, they could stick around and make the playoffs. I think Houston is going to be fine. You've seen them even play a little bit better since they made the decision to part ways with Carmelo Anthony. You know, Chris Paul and James Harden have both kind of started to look more like themselves. And that's also a team that I expect to be pretty active on the buyout market. You know, once we get, you know, into February, when, you know, some of these bad teams are, you know, cutting guys loose who are, you know, veterans who aren't going to be, part of their long-term plans. You already kind of saw it happen with, you know, the Lakers had this kind of slow start, and then they, you know, Tyson Chandler gets bought out by Phoenix. They pick him up, and he's already made a huge difference for them on the defensive end. I think you're going to see a team like Houston pick up some of those guys or something like that. And so I think they're only going to, you know, heat up as the season goes on. Portland, you know, I kind of still feel like the Blazers just kind of are what they are. When Dame and CJ are your two best players, there's only so bad you can be. I think they're going to be competitive and they're still going to make the playoffs, but I still see them as like a first or second round team at best. I don't see them as a real contender. I still think it's Golden State and then a huge gap and then everybody else when it comes to the Western Conference.
Sean, last question here I got for you. We saw Jimmy Butler move already, one of the stars in the NBA. Who's the, if you had to pick one person to be moved this season, who's the next star on the move? And even if it isn't this season, even if it trails into the offseason, who's the next guy that you most likely could put your finger on and saying, yeah, that's probably the next star that's going to move around the league?
Well, it's kind of pointing in the direction of Anthony Davis is going to be the next guy, doesn't it? I personally am a little skeptical that he's actually going to turn down the Supermax if New Orleans offers it to him, because we really haven't seen anybody turn that money down that has actually been offered it. But that's kind of the next guy you can point to and say, okay, he's going to be a free agent soon, and he might not want to stick around long term in, you know, a small market that isn't really having a lot of success. But I mean, I guess the real answer is it's probably going to be somebody on the Washington Wizards, isn't it? Like, that's, it just seems like everything is up in the air there. And, you know, if they can find someone to even take the John Wall contract, you know, that's a guy I'm sure they would love to get off of. You know, Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, and basically that whole roster seems like it's kind of up for grabs. I have to think something's going to give there in terms of one of those guys getting moved.
All right, Sean, final question. Let's bring things full circle and touch back on our Bulls real quickly. Assuming that they get back Dunn, Markkanen, and Bobby Portis sometime in, you know, the next few weeks, sometime in December, they're all back in the fold and playing real minutes. Where do you see this Bulls team finishing this season? They're already better off than they were last season when they started 3-20. They're 5-13 currently, with the same win total as the New York Knicks, more wins than the Atlanta Hawks, Cleveland Cavaliers, and Phoenix Suns, who they just beat on Wednesday. So assuming that those three guys come back and that for the rest of the season they stay relatively healthy with all their key rotation guys, where do you see the Bulls finishing in the tankathon lottery standings? And do you think this team should be tanking again this year?
Well, yes, I absolutely think they should be trying to. Because here's the thing, like, what are you accomplishing by not tanking at this point? If you're the Bulls, they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not good enough to make the playoffs.
Nothing. They're accomplishing nothing.
No. And my thing is, like, this is kind of your opportunity to do it, because you don't want to be bad for too many years in a row, or else you kind of worry about, are you going to become like what the Orlando Magic has been the last 5 or 6 years since they traded Dwight Howard, where they're just kind of in this wilderness every year where they're not a playoff team, but they're not really bad enough to get one of the top picks. I feel like this summer is when you kind of want to start actually trying to be competitive, and maybe because like, okay, they need, like, to me, they need to get a top five pick this year. Like, let's say they go into free agency, and you have, okay, you've got, at that point, you've got four guys who you can say are definitely, like, these are our pieces going forward that we're going to build around, and that's Markkanen, Carter, Levine, and whichever guy, like, if they get one of those Duke guys, like, if they get somebody like that. At that point, I feel like you have a nice enough core where you can say, okay, now we can, like, get some veterans in free agency and get some kind of more established players and maybe some more competitive win-now type of players and really try to go for it and try to get back in the playoffs. I think next year and like this coming off season is when they want to start being competitive again. But right now, you know, we know what this team is right now. And, you know, we know what they're going to be in terms of, like, they're not going to be competing for the playoffs. So yeah, you should be trying to get a top five pick and get, you know, obviously I've been listening to you guys lately. I heard the episode with Ricky the other day, and so, you know, he's all in on Zion. Obviously, I think something like that would be great if they could, you know, pull that off. It's going to be some stiff competition with some of those teams that you mentioned, like Phoenix and Atlanta, that are, you know, among the worst in the league. But that's kind of the game they need to be playing for this year, as much as it's kind of painful to talk about that, you know, you don't want to sit through another tanking season. But I feel like you just do it one more time. They have such a good foundation already with how good Carter has been so far and how good Markkanen was his rookie year. And I still think, you know, him coming back is going to open up stuff for a lot of people. And then the leap that Levine has made this season with the Bulls, like, once they have all that, like, now you can maybe start being competitive. But for this year, yeah, they need to get a top five pick.
Appreciate you being real with our listeners and Bulls fans everywhere. He is Sean Hyken. You can follow him on Twitter at Hyken to catch all of his various contributions to the world of NBA content right now at places like Bleacher Report and Dime Mag. Sean, always appreciate you coming by the show and appreciate what you and Cody Westerlund did to start this show. Hopefully Jordan and I are making you proud as we continue Locked On Bulls. And, you know, don't be a stranger. You're welcome on the show anytime.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to you guys. Keep up the great work. Congrats on all the success. And Matt, also congrats on the Bulls Outsiders. That's, you guys are killing it.
Hey, Prish, enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend, and let's talk again soon.
See you, Sean.
Yeah, sounds great.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank our guest, Sean Hyken. You can follow him on Twitter at Hyken. All of his work at Bleacher Report and Dime Up Rocks. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy two Bulls games this weekend. Hopefully, what a win tonight. Maybe not so much tomorrow night, but nonetheless, enjoy Bulls basketball tonight. Drop us a text or a voicemail after each one of those games, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. We are out, Bulls Nation. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
And today, I just got so high from that. I mean, that was, it's what you live for in life.
Sure it was the game?
Absolutely, man. These last 2 days have been a struggle for me.
Tyreek has lost 25 pounds since last year. I wish I could do that.
He's added kombucha to his diet.
What's kombucha?
It's that tea. You never had it?
No. Never heard of it.
Thought you'd be. That the oddsmakers just took a beating on that one.
Really?
Being honest.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.